A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
We're talking about practice.
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with the guys at Obstructive View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs. We're just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and enjoy talking baseball. And, of course, 2016 World Series champion Cubs. Hello, this is Ken. With me is Adam from Obstructive View. And we are actually four games deep into the Cactus League. And the Cubs have not lost yet. But, you know, it's practice. So what does that really mean? Well, it's better than losing all the games, right?
Indeed. Yeah, I'd say it means a lot. I mean, at this point, all the talk was about the Dodgers, but it's fairly safe to say the Cubs are ruining baseball by stockpiling all the talent.
Although that Cactus League talent.
Yes.
Yeah, so I figure, with the Cubs as the spring training juggernauts yet again, we can talk a little bit about certain things that have happened in terms of the owner and the GM, or the president of baseball operations, what have you, Jed Hoyer, speaking to the media about certain things, including money. The Cubs did add Justin Turner, and that was kind of cool. Like, I had thought of him as a scrap heap item, but he is actually probably the best possible addition from said scrap heap at this time. We could talk a little bit about the things that are happening around MLB, and just see what happens from here. But mostly, we're just kind of excited the Cubs are playing, like, actual baseball games, even if they don't count. How's that for a plan, sir?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
I am on board. Let's rock and roll.
As the spring gave away to summer, past the ivy-colored dreams, toward the days that kept us yearning for tomorrow.
So it's been a while since we talked about this, and it seems like it's kind of a broken record kind of thing. But the Cubs essentially seem to have maxed out their payroll for the time being. And I want to think that they do have some kind of money available to do whatever they need to do in mid-season. But, at the end of the day, they couldn't sign Alex Bregman after all. They don't seem willing to go above and beyond a certain value. And the statements seem to suggest that they are tapped out for the time being. But, I want to kind of couch that by saying that if we were going into the season with this particular Cubs team right now, they're probably winning the division. And that doesn't take too much of a stretch of the imagination to think about. So what do you think about the comments that have popped up over the past couple of weeks?
Well, the story on Bregman was interesting to me, that it seemed to have come down to the Cubs not wanting to do the deferrals that Boston committed to. And that was I haven't looked at like the projections on Bregman over the next six seasons, but Boston paid a lot for him. That was a pretty big price tag that they put on him. And the deal that the Cubs reportedly offered was higher than I thought that they would have gone. So, whether that is higher than they should have gone, I can't say. But I can't say that I'm disappointed in their effort in trying to get him. Now, if I were a Red Sox fan, I think I would be a little bit more mystified by what happened, just because of the complications that ensued since they acquired him. But from the Cubs side, it seems like the way I interpreted the overall spin from Jed was not that they're tapped out necessarily, like that they just can't spend anymore. It just seems like there's really not anything that they are likely to put a lot of money toward in what's left, which would probably mean they're not going to get Anthony Rizzo either. But who knows? I don't know what type of salary he's commanding either. But yeah, it just seemed like, okay, all the cool stuff that we would have wanted has already been purchased. So now we're just, settling into the reality that this is pretty much the Cubs team that you're going to see moving forward. It seems like all the likely trade pieces, the heat behind those rumors has cooled off, and their respective teams are wanting to just go ahead and commit to trying to win with them and see what happens when the trade deadline looms. But for now, yeah, I'd say the Cubs are looking pretty decent.
It might be
That's
worse.
yeah,
But
it
right now
definitely
I'm pretty entertained, right?
it's a better outlook than it has been the last 2 years as the season begins.
Absolutely. I think it's kind of interesting because with the lack of deferrals or just what the deferrals aren't happening right now for this particular type of player. I feel like they want to make sure that they're only using deferrals for certain types of players. I want to say that the John Lester contract and the Jason Hayward contract both had deferrals. They were longer and they were kind of hefty. I don't think Dansby Swanson's contract has any deferrals. And by not giving deferrals, like maybe you get yourself out of the running for certain players, but those players that you do get, they get present day money, like right now. It's the value is the value rather than like trying to figure out what the value is going to be like 20 years after you're done playing because they're still paying you deferrals, right? So
Yeah.
from that standpoint, it seems like the Cubs are giving you fair value. But I also wonder if it has something to do with debt payments or whatever. I don't actually know understand the way the Cubs are operating because I feel like at least part of the issue is that they're still continuing to finance Wrigley Field renovations, do some debt service, and then they have these like other owners that are that have minority stakes in the team that they are beholden to. And I honestly don't know why they wouldn't want to defer money. Like I know that they have to hold this money into like some kind of weird escrow account so that they make sure because these contracts are guaranteed. The player needs to get their money, even if it's deferred over the next 25 years or whatever. So they do have to set this money aside. But maybe it's just bad financial practice. I honestly don't know, but especially when you look at the Dodgers, like a lot of their guys have such deferred money because they want to be Dodgers, they want to be part of the super team. They're okay with the deferrals because they're getting paid so much anyway that what's a few million here or there, and like when I retire, I'll get like an extra $5 million nest egg being paid on top of my pension, right? So I don't know. Like I'm not the player. Like if it were up to me, I'd want that money, up front with larger value so that I can put it into my own account and let it grow. But again, they're getting paid so much that maybe it doesn't matter. They just want to be part of the team. And, I don't know if you listen to Starkville with Jason Stark and Doug Glanville, but Friedman, Andrew Friedman, was on this past week, and he was talking about like basically turning the Dodgers into a premier destination. And I feel like the Cubs can try to do that again, like they did when they were going to the NLCS every year. But at some point that changed, and the Dodgers became the premier destination. And we keep coming back to how do we get the Cubs to become that destination again? And I don't think they're going to overcome the Dodgers, but they could at least be a very good second banana type of situation, right?
Yeah, I think that judging the appeal of playing for the Cubs is almost like judging the current status of climate change. And not even strictly in a metaphorical sense, but literally, if the wind is favorable on average, like if you have a hitter-friendly year at Wrigley Field, I think it becomes a very nice, appealing place for a close to veteran to veteran player to come sign. Playing in front of the fans, it is a great fan base. It's a great city. It is a great city in the summer. And if the wind is blowing out, there are not many better places to hit. But last year was a great place for a great year for a pitcher like Shota to decide to pitch for the Cubs. So like if you're trying to get that next Imanaga, the next Lester, the next free agent pitcher signing, a year like last year is a much better advertisement than if you are in a, I don't know, El Nino situation, whichever one it is that causes more wind to blow out toward left center field. Because I really do think that has something to do with it. Like if you're a hitter who really looks at your advanced metrics and really thinks about what setting is going to be best for your game, and obviously I do think that this is secondary to money in general, but that it has to be a factor if you're looking and you see that Wrigley Field is one of the toughest places to hit or was that year, that past year, that's got to put a little dent into what you're expecting to produce. So I don't know. I think that's part of the situation. I don't think it's the whole thing. I do think a lot of it comes down to just the money in general, but fan appeal, city appeal, which way is the wind blowing? And yeah, are the Cubs on track to win? And right now, I do think that they could position themselves as, a great a premier destination for quality players. We'll see if that holds up. But it's definitely not going to be the place where you set up your permanent retirement income for deferred payments on until you're 50 or 60 years old or whatever.
Now, I'm biased, and you probably are too. We're Cubs fans. I enjoy going to Wrigley. I think it's a great place to watch a game. Like, I've been cold as hell before. It's just ridiculously cold sometimes, especially in the early season. And there are times when it was so stupid hot that you actually needed those misting stations, right? But it's always been a fun place to watch a ball game. I think depending on, whether you have young children or children that are older and can entertain themselves, it might not be the best ballpark for a young child because there's just not as much stuff to do as some of the mo more modern stuff ballparks. There's just not a lot of space in the park, right? But it's just a really pretty place to watch a ball game. There's a lot of fun, and I think just from that traditional standpoint, it has a lot of appeal. And it's kind of cool that guys like, say, Justin Turner was saying, I wanted to be here because he's always wanted to be a Cub, and I think I want at this age I want to win, and I believe that the Cubs have that kind of attitude to win in 2025, and that's really nice to hear. You got guys like Ian Happ who actually want to stay in Chicago, you know, so he was drafted by the club and he's been here for, I feel like it's been 9 years or 9 seasons at least. Like I don't think he has 9 years of service, but yeah, people actually want to be here. Now, whether or not it's the right people for your like really hardcore fan or whoever, that's a different story, but people do actually want to be here, and I think that that's important. If they can win in 2025 and you know, baseball gods willing, they go all the way or as far as they can in the postseason. That generates money that can then be spent to, you know, bring in more people to like bolster the club and to hopefully extend the Kyle Tucker, right? But you know, they still have to play 2025 first, and so it really comes down to can they actually win this year? And then generate that momentum to carry forward into 2026 and beyond. And hopefully there isn't a huge lockout in 2027, but we really don't know. Like there's a lot of major unknowns leading up to the next CBA.
Yes. Like, what country will this be when that
Oh
comes
no.
around?
Or will Toronto not have to care anymore because they're the 51st state? But anyway,
Yes. Or what
yeah.
form of government will we be playing under? And how will the monarchy view baseball? Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah. We shall see.
it's a crazy time, but you know,
Yeah.
we use baseball as a distraction, and it's been a nice distraction so far from the really goofy and strange and scary things that have been happening lately in the rest of the world. Wow.
Yes,
It's rough, man.
it's definitely when things are like this, it definitely has me much more in a let's worry about 2025 mode, and everything else just can't even I can't even project what to expect in 2026 and beyond. So work
Yeah,
stoppages and all that, no
that's
idea. Let's
yeah,
worry about 2025.
but that's a good point. Like, you know, that people are freaking out about trading for this guy that they might not be able to extend or keep after when he's free agent. But the point is, you have a Kyle Tucker for 2025.
Yeah, and
Let's really do something
he
about
really does transform the lineup.
it. Yeah.
And like I always say, unless you were trading away one of your top two players to get him, in the lineup, which the Cubs didn't, at least not in the here and now. Maybe the prospect they gave up will prove to be something, but you aren't replacing Ian Happ with Kyle Tucker. You aren't even replacing Seiya with Kyle Tucker. Like maybe in right field, but in the batting order, he's still going to be there. You're replacing essentially your worst hitter in the lineup with Kyle Tucker.
Yeah,
And
that's a major
that,
upgrade, yeah.
yeah, it's you're going from someone who was a hole, a lapse, a soft spot in the lineup where if you're the opponent, that Mastroboni or whoever is in that slot where you're like, okay, that's our easy out. That's our like I'm not too worried about damage happening there. That's when we have to monopolize and take advantage of the leverage we have. And you're replacing him, batting wise with a perennial all-star, a perennial MVP candidate. So yeah, that's a big deal. It makes a big difference in how things happen inning to inning, how your lineup turns over, what the opponent has to do in order to get you out. And yeah, I think, today, just even in seeing, a couple at bats, like, dude hits the ball hard. Like, he was, I think everything he hit today was with top spin. So, it stayed lower, but yeah, the dude's got a swing. He's a legitimate threat in the lineup. Somebody who you're gonna want to stick around and watch if he's in the next two or three batters. You're not gonna want to turn the game off or take a bathroom break or go run to the concession stand. When Kyle Tucker is coming up to the plate, you're gonna want to see it, because there's a better chance than normal that something good is going to happen. And it's going to be exciting to see what that does to the lineup. That said, on the other side of things, if I never hear the word oblique again, I'll be a happy man. But yeah, there have been some setbacks.
There, like, I think Assad is about to start a throwing program. In fact, I think he was playing catch earlier this weekend, but I'm not sure. They says Matt Shaw is actually taking swings and doing some baseball activity, so it's not that bad. But Owen Casey has a groin pull, and I think he's out for a while. Then they had just DFA'd Alexander Canario to get Justin Turner on the roster. So that leaves, it basically means you're short two outfielders who could have potentially played center field. And now the presumptive backup is Kevin Alcantara, who you don't want to just rot on the bench. And then there's two others, and Vidal Bruhan, which you're just like, I would prefer he not be on the bench, but if he were sitting on the bench and never played, we're okay with that. And then there's Gage Workman, who he actually got three games in a row to start Cactus League, and I thought that was interesting. I never really thought that guys would get three in a row on three successive days starting spring, like even if they were just a random prospect. Like you almost never see that, but he got three in a row, and so that really piqued my interest, because I was like, yeah, like again, you very rarely see that, because two in a row is exceedingly rare. They'll Like if you look at Ian Happ, he skipped a day before he played again, right? And Tucker didn't even get into a spring training game until Sunday. So it's like, why is he getting three in a row? And it makes me think that they really, really, really want to give him a chance to be that bench guy, especially since he has the Rule 5 implications on him. Like he has to be on the active roster, the 26-man roster, or else he gets returned to Detroit.
Yeah. Well, name like Gage Workman, you show up to work. You're in there every day. That's the way it works. You're a workman. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see if they keep him on. He has looked good. We'll see
He's
what
got a
happens
very good
there.
glove. Did you know that his legal middle name is actually Tater? It's not a nickname. His legal name is actually Gage Tater Workman.
Gage
So,
Tater Workman. Okay.
yeah,
Well,
if you go to baseballreference.com right now and look him up under his full name, it's Gage Tater Workman. Like, it doesn't even list as a nickname. His parents, who I assume, like, helped build the birth certificate and everything, like on his birth certificate it says Gage Tater Workman somehow, and I don't even understand how that happens, but that's what it is. He did hit a
hey.
tater too. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a nice bit of trivia there, Gage Tater Workman. It sounds like a password, a mnemonic device or something. Like Gage Tater Workman, Gage Tater Workman, Gage Tater Workman. I gotta remember GTW, Gage Tater Workman. I don't know. It's weird. But hey, he's a big dude.
He
Looks
played
good,
right
so we'll
field,
see.
right field next to Kevin Alcantara, who was playing center field. And so I've been thinking to myself, hey, if he ever shows up in center field and actually looks passable, that's it. He probably is the bench guy. Like, there's a reason they drafted him in Rule 5, even though he's never played above Double A. There is a reason they're giving him all these opportunities. They really want him to earn it. Okay. And I guess there's a reason too that they decided to DFA Canario instead of Bruhan for such reasons. And part of it, I think, is a human thing. Like, they basically did say Matt Mervis a favor. They're like, Matt Mervis behind Bush and Turner and everybody. There is absolutely no, like, they traded him before this happened, but there's no way he's making the team over Bush and whoever else, right? So they're just like, here, you get to go to the Marlins and they suck, so you'll probably get a lot of playing time. And if you can take advantage of it, that's good for your career, like they did with Jake Berger, right? But yeah, it's a really interesting set of decisions that I think angered a few people, because Canario was one of the Chris Bryant trade pieces, and you're already looking at Caleb Killian and he's forgotten how to pitch or whatever, and now you don't have Canario anymore. So a lot of people are upset that they traded Chris Bryant for basically nothing. And at the same time, just like, well, Chris Bryant was a rental, and these guys were interesting for a little bit until they weren't. So, it's just the nature of baseball. But yeah, like, at this point, if you build a team, if you don't have an Alexander Canario on the team, it doesn't really matter, because most of these starters are playing most of the games anyway. And the three guys who are going to be on the bench, like, whoever's not catching that day, John Birdie and Justin Turner, they can, hold their own. So if you're looking at the fourth bench guy, maybe it's okay to have a Gage Workman who has a really good glove and apparently can back up both third base and at least a corner outfield spot.
Yeah, he's giving a little bit of a second coming of David Bodie, in terms of his utility on the team and how he shows up. I mean, I remember not having any idea where the heck David Bodie came from when he showed up and started winning games. And I have that same vibe with Workman, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
The beauty and the history in this cathedral, the sky so blue against the grass so green, like time stood still forever.
It is crazy to me, not to jump too far ahead, but it's also not that far away. We are, let's see, one like 2.5 weeks away from the Cubs being in Japan. We've got
Talking about
they play
sure when we are. Yeah, he yeah.
a couple of exhibition games in Tokyo before the season starts, and then they have a handful of spring training games after the opening day, the two opening day, or the two opening games against LA in Tokyo. And I'm really starting to get genuinely excited about that. Super happy for Shota, taking the mound as the opening day starter in the Tokyo Dome, against the Dodgers, with I don't know how many Japanese-born players will be in that series, but it's a significant amount. And yeah, it's been a long time since I've been excited about waking up at 5 in the morning.
So early, yeah.
But I'm psyched for it. I'm pretty pumped. How are you feeling?
I'm pretty, thrilled about it. I think, just off the top of my head, you obviously have Yamamoto and Shohei on Dodgers side and Seiya and Shota on the Cubs side. So that's four. Four out of the 52 players are Japanese, and that's more than has historically happened. And they did give, at least Shota did gave a shout out to all the Japanese players that came before him. And we are, a few weeks from learning that Ichiro is going to the Hall of Fame. So that's great too. There's gonna be a lot of hype for this series. And I think the fact that they decided to put both games on at prime time and forget the rest of us, like you remember when they had the London series with the Cubs, they had one game at like a stupid hour and then one game at a regular hour for the US audience. And this
Right.
time, both games are going to be prime time in Tokyo because who cares about the United States? This is not about the US. This is about building the game in Japan and building hype. Especially, I think Seiya was saying that a lot of Japanese kids aren't playing as much baseball anymore. So building hype for the next generation of great Japanese players who could one day join them in MLB. That's a huge thing. And
Yeah.
so I think if we're excited there, they've got to be like 10 times more excited over there.
Yeah, it's gonna be pretty sick. But yeah, I can't imagine being in their shoes. What it would be like to stand on that mound to start a game. Yeah, it should be fun. Should be fun.
Not butterflies, but all those guys have World Baseball Classic experience. They've done it before, in terms of an international competition. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's probably like the stateside players, especially those that don't have WBC experience. They're just like, wow, this is huge, and look at all these Japanese fans like really freaking out, and in a good way,
Yeah.
it.
Yeah. It's gonna be cool. And like I was saying in our comment section, like it's the perfect recipe. Because if they win either of those games, it's like, okay, great. We got a good positive start to the season. Everything's looking up. Can't wait to see where the season's gonna go from here. But if they lose both games, it's also like, man, it's still spring training. This isn't even real. Like, don't even bother looking at the record. Who cares? So it's yeah, and it's so early, like they lose, like you could even go back to bed after a loss. So like
Yeah.
yeah, it's pretty fun. Yeah, it's got me pumped. Now speaking of, and this the both games are on Fox, right?
Believe so. I have to look, but it sounds like both games will be on Fox, yeah.
But as far as other national TV broadcasts, that's been a little bit of a topic of conversation. Major League
I think
Baseball on ESPN is
this is
apparently,
last year, I think. If
yeah.
that's the case, yeah, this it will be last year. Just heading back, if you click on the schedule for those two games in Japan, it's both on Marquee.
Yeah,
But I
yeah.
don't see Fox listed, so I'll have to double check on that. But I think closer to that time, we'll have a lot more articles confirming that it's on Fox. You brought up a good point about the TV thing. Like, and my wife and I were talking about this earlier too. Like, because she saw the things about, MLB.TV and blackouts, and I was trying to explain to her what MLB was trying to do, like eventually just grab all the rights back for the local broadcasts and make sure that you're on a service that has no blackouts anywhere. That's the ideal. That's going to take years, though. So in the meantime, just hope, Marquee figures it out. They find a carriage partner, even if it's not Comcast, because I think they're having trouble like hammering out their deal with Comcast. You essentially want the sport to be accessible to as many people as possible. And of course, they want to make money, but maybe if you let people watch, you'll make money organically. I don't know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But yeah. Now, here's a thing that I was going to ask you. So they're not, they didn't, so the Cubs didn't get Bregman. Which means they didn't have to spend all that money, which means the big rumor was that if they had to spend all that money, they would have had to get rid of
Avocado toast.
some other money. So essentially trade Nico Hoerner, right? And that made no sense to me because you're essentially downgrading the offense or the defense in order to get who knows what with offense. Now, it's not saying that Alex Bregman isn't going to be a good player. He obviously is. He's now going to a ballpark that's more suited for him. But we talked about this in passing. That's causing a major problem with the clubhouse climate in Boston because Rafael Devers doesn't want to stop playing third base despite the fact that he sucks at it. And Bregman is obviously the better third baseman. So how do you think they're going to deal with that?
I don't know. It's really the exact opposite of what you want. Obviously, you sign a player because he's better at playing baseball, but we also know from approaching CubsCon and how that normally goes, the other reason for making a big signing is just to generate fan interest. Right? Like there's this huge charge of fan interest and excitement among the club when you know, all right, our owners are serious about developing a winner and turning us into a team who's really going to do something and make this a special year. And when you commit that many hundreds of millions of dollars towards one player and for that length of time, and it immediately gets greeted with a wet blanket reaction within your team, you're ruining one of the great benefits of making that big signing of all the positive vibes and good energy and hopefulness that you typically want to accompany the beginning of a season. And it's one thing if you've got somebody who's like, oh yeah, we've had this third baseman forever and he's still got a couple years on his contract and he's not really happy, and so we gotta cater to his ego. But it's somebody they just signed to a 10-year extension. It's not just oh yeah, old man Devers over there is throwing a fit. He signed there for 10 years. It was supposed to be your franchise player that you're building your team around. And for good reason, he's really good, just not the best glove man at third. So the initial reports when they first signed Bregman was that they were going to put Bregman at second base, and that's how they were going to make it work, which I have no idea how good he is at second base. So, no real reason to doubt that plan or think too much of it. But just as the longer the story has stewed, that's when things kind of came out that, well, we when we signed the 10-year extension, we had a different general manager at the helm, and he made promises that, frankly, we didn't like etch those in stone. And when we replaced the GM, thought, well, okay, but whatever he wanted to do, we were going to do. If they agreed with the plans that the old GM had, they would not have fired him, but they did. So, Joey Cora has his work cut out for him as a manager. I really do think it's this is when I think managers really earn their money, is how they negotiate these type of situations.
It's
And
Alex.
Alex
Joe
Cora,
is
yeah,
his brother.
Joey,
That's
sorry. Sorry,
okay.
Cora brothers. I know what it's like to get confused with your brother. It happens all the time. It'll happen again. But yeah, this is where the managers make their money, because you have to keep guys in the right headspace in order to get through a 6 month plus long baseball season where everybody's together every single day and you're managing a lot of egos, a lot of personalities, and yeah, you're starting off on the wrong foot, with this potential conflict. So, yeah, and it's the Cubs have I don't want to say a very similar, but a similar situation that we've talked about before with Saya, and the new changes with with Kyle Tucker coming into right field and Saya really spending eventually what became most of last year in a DH role, because the Cubs really did have plus defenders in excess in the outfield. And today we had yet another Saya error that helped allow a run in the first inning. So it's that type of a situation can go from rumblings to serious, we gotta come to Jesus issue, as every single defensive miscue, if in Boston they keep things where they are, if they do put Bregman at second, every
Probably
single
won't be
defensive
too
play
long
at
yet.
third, yeah, will be under a microscope. And
Yeah.
you just can't play defense like that.
Yeah.
That is the absolute best way to make sure a guy sucks at a defensive position, is create and cultivate a situation where his fielding is under a microscope. Is you take what's already a difficult sport and you turn it into a psychological maelstrom. And baseball is played largely in your head, and it's not exactly where you want it to be. So, I wasn't super optimistic about Boston's chances this year to begin with, but man, this is they're not getting off to a good start, and that is not a division where you can afford to have any extra drama on your team.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Saya because I think Craig Counsell and him have figured out their communication things. I think he understands based on the personnel that he's probably going to be the primary DH, and the agent's going to say what he says. Saya is going to be a team player. He'll play where he wants. I'm not as entirely sure about Devers and Boston. Like, is Devers willing to move to first base? And then Tristan Casas has to be the DH or something. I don't know. It sounds like they're all unhappy about having to move positions, right? You're not getting the same vibe in Cubs camp. And that's good. You're getting guys who seem to enjoy playing together, who are having fun, who are at this point in time undefeated in practice games. And that's a good place to be. Even in today's game when the pitchers are getting in their work and nobody's really getting hits except for PCA and BJ Murray Jr. And then everybody goes off, they take their showers, and then new prospects are in, and suddenly like weird stuff happens and the Cubs win anyway. It's kind of fun. But I think the cool thing is that we're just looking at games. You had brought up the injury situation. We have a couple of concerns, but for the most part, everybody seems healthy. They've played pretty well. And aside from Michael Bush almost murdering a pitcher, it's gone fairly, I guess, drama free for the most part. They're just getting in their work. They're going home healthy, and everybody's in good spirits. And I think that's the best we can hope for right now until they get to Japan.
Yeah, and Bush's look good too. He looks, JD had mentioned in the broadcast that he looked like he bulked up a respectable amount. Not, didn't turn into a muscle bound steroid riddled freak or anything, but looks like he's a little stronger. Looks like he did some working out in the off season. It would definitely be a great thing to see Bush take a step forward offensively. He made such like I don't think anybody would disagree that he made tremendous strides forward defensively as a first baseman, acclimating to that position for essentially the first time. So by the end of the year, he was looking like a gold glove first baseman. Like he had an outside shot at being a finalist at first for gold glove. But yeah, let's see if the offense for him moves forward. That can be that would be huge. And it's I will say this just in general, and because with Shaw being injured and him not having the spring playing time that I think as a team and a fan base and probably for himself as a player, you really would have liked to see, we don't expect too much from any one individual in the spring as far as output goes. You like to see guys looking good basically, but you're not, analyzing stats or anything for anybody, but just getting no playing time at all, especially with a couple of trips, basically a trip around the world thrown into the middle of spring training. I think everybody was pretty excited to see what, how Shaw would look coming through spring, and it's not clear how much time he's actually going to spend playing in games in the spring. So, that does throw some cold water on the excitement in camp. But in general, and it's the great thing about adding somebody like Kyle Tucker, if you can become the type of team that really does put a ton of runs on the board, if you can create the type of lineup where there just aren't that many holes in the lineup, there aren't, the other team can't take that many deep size of relief, when they reach a certain spot in your batting order, like, okay, all right, we're no longer going to get killed. When you remove those soft spots from your lineup, and when it becomes just either I'm facing a hitter who's really difficult to get out, or I'm facing a hitter who, frankly, I'm worried about what they're going to do at the plate. When it's like that every time, when it goes from kind of difficult to really difficult to getting out, there becomes so little pressure on any one individual to have the game of their life. And that changes the way the entire lineup approaches their at bats. You have people playing loose and free, and it just becomes that much easier to hit because nobody is stressing out that they have to do it or there will be no offense. When you have a lineup that is stacked with high quality offensive players to average, better than average offensive players, and everybody is playing fairly well, you just end up scoring a lot of runs. And there just isn't that same type of pressure on anybody in any given situation. And you start to see less of that, oh, three guys strike out in a row after you loaded the bases. Or, I mean, we know from watching the Cubs over the last few years what it's been like when you're really needing everybody to have a career year in order for the Cubs to compete. So it's that seeing that the possibility of that dynamic shift is something I'm really looking forward to. And I think going back to Seiya and the defense in general, I that type of atmosphere, should it show up, should the Cubs have an offensive resurgence this year, it lowers the pressure on the defensive end too. And I think that could be exactly what the doctor ordered for Shaw, if he's taken a lot of reps at third base as the season goes on. And for Seiya, if he does get a little bit, if they do the kind of rotation, the word's escaping me now for the platooning, as you get into June, July, and August, where they do give the different outfielders either a day off or a day to DH. When the team's scoring a ton of runs, you aren't stressed in the outfield that you need to make every single play, or you aren't stressed at third base that, if you don't stop this ground ball, your team's going to end up losing. So it's the great thing about adding quality players is more talent you have on the team, the less pressure there is on anybody to play the game of their life. And the more relaxed you play, generally, the better you play. The closer you get to your top potential. So I know I'm like vision casting at this point because we don't have any hard proof that the Cubs are actually going to be a better offense. We'll believe it when we see it. But I think the elements are there. It's one of the great things about adding a guy like Justin Turner. You have somebody who can keep guys loose, give them good advice. Been through the good
Lots
times, the
of good
bad times of
mentors, yeah.
various teams. Yeah. So, yeah, I have a good feeling about this year for a lot of different reasons. So I'm excited to see what happens.
And I think we can talk about the schedule and the pitching next time too. Like by the time we speak again, I think Matt Shaw will likely have gotten into a few games or at least more intense baseball action. We'll have more news on Nico. He's playing long toss right now, so that's probably a good sign, like being able to just air it out after his arm surgery. So at the same time, if Shaw and or Nico have to miss like a couple of weeks to start the season, the Cubs are not in like a devastating position. They have guys who can fill in for a few and if necessary, just bat them ninth because the other eight guys seem to be able to hit pretty well. So Yeah, there's a lot of good things coming up. And I was looking at the schedule. Do you know that the Cubs do not play at any point, at least pending rainouts and whatnot, but they do not play on Thursday, any Thursday in April this year?
No, I didn't see that at all.
Yeah, there's a
That's
lot of off days. They can really build in a lot of rest days for their guys, the pitchers, and really be creative. So, especially if they can keep everybody healthy, I think this is going to be a really good way for them to weather this part of the schedule because April is a lot of playoff contender-ish teams, including the A's, who like decided they should probably spend before the union yells at them. But yeah, this is an interesting schedule. Like they literally do not play at all on Thursdays in April. That's really cool. Well, it's not cool for us because we have nothing to do on Thursdays in April, but
Yeah, and
it's good
only
for
one
them.
Thursday in May,
Yeah.
as it turns out. It's visually the schedule is kind of hilarious. So
Yeah, and then
yeah,
they
and I
play on every
think
Thursday in June. But yeah.
it's something else that's kind of interesting. They are done with the Dodgers on April 23rd, if I'm seeing this correctly. So
I believe you're right.
they play the Dodgers, that
In
opening
Japan,
series in
yeah.
Japan, and then they play them in LA in the second week of April, or that weekend, and then they play them two more games in Chicago
And then they're
in
done.
late April, and then they don't play the Dodgers again until the NLCS. So
Same with the D-backs. I think they're done with the D-backs in April too. That's a crazy schedule.
good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
That's amazing.
that's okay. All right. Thursdays.
And we get to see the Cubs play in Sacramento too, so we'll get a look at the Sacramento ballpark as
Oh.
an MLB venue. So that's fun. Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah, and watch, it'll turn out that it'll just be the rainiest April on record, and the Cubs will play every Thursday, throughout
After getting an
the
impromptu day
season.
off, but it evens out.
If you look through the whole season, the only Thursday they only have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 scheduled Thursday games. So that is kind
Thursday's
of
golf
like
day.
after, yeah. They play a lot in June, and then they go back to Thursday being a on and off again day for the rest of the season. So that's kind of fun.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think yeah, they will play every weekend from now on. So, we don't have any Friday, Saturday, or Sundays without Cubs games for the rest of this season, right? And that's pretty
Right.
cool. I think by the time we talk again next time, like we'll see how the pitcher's health is going. We'll see whether Nico and Shaw get back into the fold, and we'll see more games where we get the projected what I project anyway. It is a lineup that we'll see in the regular season. Like I think we can talk about lineup construction next time too. Thank you for hosting this again.
Of course.
It's very nice of you to share your Zoomness.
Indeed.
Yeah, you can find us at obstructiveview.net. Our theme song is by Rich Deanna, and Randall Sanders pulled the final out call from the 2016 World Series, which the Cubs won, because people forget that. And we'll see everybody around. Thanks again to Adam for hosting this.
My pleasure.
The dog. looks like he's lying down, but he should still go out tonight before we go to bed. So I'll do
that's next on my docket too. So, it's
All right.
funny, every time someone says, oh, a lot of people forget that the Cubs won the World Series, it makes me laugh knowing that the White Sox won in 2005, and a lot of people literally do forget that
Yeah,
they won.
but I think they finally had to take the 2005 World Series champion banner off of the side of the cell not too long ago. Like it was
Oh.
there for the longest time while I was living in Chicago when I was in grad
Ah.
school, and probably just before I left, it disappeared. So
Oh.
it wasn't. It's been a long time. They've had that banner on forever. But yeah, maybe they'll be better this year.
I don't think so. I mean, they might be like marginally better,
The
by
Cubs
luck, by some
did
lucky
defeat
stroke.
them in Cactus League. But yeah, we'll enjoy the spring training games and we'll see how they do in games that matter. So go Cubs.
Yeah, go
It's
Cubs.
more than just a game.